Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Eye on the Community. I'm Vicki Pepper. East Asian students have always gained higher scores on the international comparative tests than American students. Here to discuss with me why that is and how we can make U.S. children better students is Dr. Cornelius Grove, author of A Mirror for Americans and A Drive to Learn. Dr. Grove, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
I'm very happy to do so, and I'm doing so from Brooklyn, New York.
Please give us a brief overview of your just published book, A Mirror for Americans.
Well, I would like to start off by just giving a little background for your listeners. And you mentioned in your introduction the international comparative tests. These have been given since the 1960s. The one that's most often discussed is called PISA, Program for International Student Assessment, and there are others. And what has got my interest and the interest of many other people is that East Asian students have always outperformed American students on these tests. East Asia means China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Japan, and Korea. So scholars wondered why, because we're now thinking around 1970. Scholars said the U.S. kids really should be better because, as everybody knows, the education in the United States is better. And they thought of this as a paradox. So they began to do research, and over 50 years, a great deal of research was done. I estimate approximately 1,000 research studies were completed in that 50-year period. And eventually, the scholars who were involved included people from all around the world, including East Asia itself. And so these scholars looked into everything that could possibly explain why the East Asian students were performing better on these academic tests. And they looked not only at schools, but they looked into homes, everything they could think of. By the way, this research has always been freely available to the public, but most members of the public don't want to read academic scholarly right. research papers. I became fascinated by this research, and I decided to translate, you might say, the key findings into readily understood language. And this has resulted now in two books, which I refer to as my sister volumes. And I'm glad that you started off by mentioning both of them. The first of them was called The Drive to Learn. It was published in 2017, and it's about what goes on in homes in East Asia and compares East Asian child rearing to American child rearing, all based on the research findings. The key finding is, as I understand it, that due to home upbringing, East Asian children are more receptive to formal classroom learning. Ultimately, this is due to the cultural values of East Asia. And my second book, which is just published now, is about the other side of the story, the other side of the coin. It's about what goes on in schools. It's entitled A Mirror for Americans. And the key finding, as I understand it here, is that East Asian primary school lessons emphasize the knowledge that the children are supposed to learn, that is to say, the content. They are not student-centered, and they are not teacher-centered. They are knowledge-centered. Again, this is a result of culture. So culture how we really prefer to do things, our attitudes and our deep values that drive our behavior is the fundamental explanation for this difference. And both books, and that includes A Mirror for Americans, end up pointing to the cultural value, the difference in cultural values between East Asia, again, that's China, Japan, Korea, and so forth, and the United States. By the way, I just want to say one more thing, that these books are actually amazingly short. The Drive to Learn is only 116 pages, and The Mirror for Americans is only 126 pages.
You claim that A Mirror for Americans is research-based. Whose research is that?
The research is the research of these scholars who began around 1970. I only personally know a handful of these scholars. Many of them, you know, probably have died by now. The original scholars were mostly from Australia. Then there were plenty of Americans because the East Asian education was being compared to American education, that is to say, the outcomes of education. And then more scholars from Europe and other parts of the world became involved, and eventually East Asian scholars became involved. That began to happen around 2000. So this has been a huge body of research that has been carried out over 50 years by hundreds of scholars. And this is what I'm relying on. It's not my personal research. I'm relying on published scholarly research. By published, I mean in academic journals and books out from major publishers.
What grade levels of children's education are the focus of your book, A Mirror for Americans?
I'm looking almost entirely, I'm looking at primary school, the early grades, and the first two chapters of A Mirror for Americans, well, I should say the second and third chapter after the introductory chapter, are about preschools. And I focus there on preschools in Japan because they are very, very different from American preschools, very interesting, and because much more research has been done on Japanese preschools than on Chinese preschools.
What exactly is the mirror to which you refer to in the title?
My contention is, and I think I'm very similar to other people in my academic field, that it doesn't make sense to advocate that we just look at some of the techniques or methods that East Asian primary school teachers are using and say, well, let's just bring these into the United States. Let's see if we can just copy and paste these way of doing things. That really never works. There have been plenty of examples where things have been tried to bring from one culture to another. I mean, complex things like how to teach children. Obviously, there are simple things that are brought from one culture to another all the time. For example, sometimes when we say goodbye to people, we say ciao. Well, it's just a single word that has come from Italian. That can go from one culture to another without any trouble. But when we're talking about something as complex and historically grounded as teaching children, it's a completely different matter. But in A Mirror for Americans, I wrote that book to say, let's see what's going on there and look at the underlying values, because really what it takes is not just transferring some techniques here, but thinking about how our values, our cultural values, our preferences about children and children's learning and education, how when we look at those, we can see more clearly our own. They enable us to say, oh, they think about it this way, and gosh, we think about it a little bit differently. So it's looking at that set of values in a way that helps us understand better and see more clearly our own values and be able to think about them more objectively.
It's kind of like how they say, if you want to understand your own language better, you should study another.
Excellent example. Excellent example.
What was your main finding or conclusion in A Mirror for Americans?
My main finding, well, let me be clear about this. It's not my own research. I have done research like this, but it was a different piece of research. It was relative to Portugal. My main finding is, as I read all this research, this huge mountain of research that has come from 50 years of work in East Asia, I believe what it boils down to is the fact that lessons, that is to say, not necessarily, I'm drawing a distinction here between classrooms and lessons. Classrooms is everything that goes on in classrooms. Lessons is, you know, when an academic subject like mathematics is actually being taught the lesson. I believe that what this research eventually comes around to say is that the lessons are focused, organized very, very carefully around what the children are supposed to be learning. Nothing else is allowed to get in the way of that. In the United States, we talk all the time, and educators are really very, very concerned that lessons be student-centered or child-centered. East Asians don't think like this. They don't worry about whether a lesson is child-centered or teacher-centered. That's not on their radar screen. I guess it's on their radar screen if they know a little bit about what's going on in the U.S. They don't really think this way. What they're trying to do is to ensure that the children learn whatever it is that they are supposed to be learning. Maybe it's national history. Maybe it's algebra. Maybe it's biology. And the lessons are very focused on this learning goal in many different ways. And in the final chapter of A Mirror for Americans, I review what I've done in the previous chapters, a dozen different ways in which the East Asians manage in one way or another to focus on the actual knowledge that the children are supposed to learn, and they stick with that. That's what goes on.
I'm speaking with Dr. Cornelius Grove, author of A Mirror for Americans, What the East Asian Experience Tells Us About Teaching Students Who Excel. Dr. Grove, you write that if an American preschool switched to 100% Japanese approaches in dealing with its children, that the principal would be arrested. Why is that?
In Japanese preschools, as revealed by the research, during about half of the time that the children are in school, so this could be as much as 2 hours a day, the children are turned loose to do whatever they want to do. They have the run of the classroom, the hallway, the stairwells, the bathrooms, the outdoor playground. They have access to any material that they can find, toys, blocks, whatever has been made available for them. The chairs are there, the desks are there. And they have access to water and pails and sandboxes and shovels and whatever, and they basically are allowed to freely play for long stretches of time with very, very little direct supervision by the teachers.
Now, one researcher wrote that East Asian teachers are able to spend almost 50% more time per classroom period imparting subject content. Can you explain why?
In preschool, when they're not having these free play periods, and in first grade, the students in East Asia are taught how to learn in classrooms. They are not only taught how, they practice how to learn, how to sit, how to respond to questions, how to ask questions, how to come up to the board, the front of the room, to explain something. And they're also taught, and they practice, how to rearrange the room depending on what the teacher wants to accomplish. For example, sometimes the teacher wants the students to get into small groups, to do something in small groups, and then later to come back to a full class arrangement. And this means that a lot of chairs and tables need to be scooted around the room. The children in East Asia in the preschool and first grade are taught how to do this. They are drilled in these activities. And so after that, the teacher has very little class management. The children are sharing with the teacher the responsibility for the success of the lesson. They are supporting her in their behavior because they have been taught and have been drilled how to do this. And researchers who go to American classrooms and East Asian classrooms say that in American classrooms, teachers are spending an awful lot of time managing transitions in the classroom and other aspects of student behavior And that's not time when they can be teaching the subject. But in East Asia, the kids know how to support the teacher, and so the teacher has much more time in order to focus on the content.
So are the roles that teachers play in East Asia different from teachers' roles here?
The roles are different because they're actually more involved with the students. One thing that so many of these scholars have commented on is that in American preschools and especially primary schools, there is quite a bit of emphasis on the students' cognitive growth. In other words, how are they thinking? How are they learning? Are they learning this or that? Now, you would think that would lead to superior outcomes. In East Asia, well, cognitive growth is an important thing, but they're much more involved in East Asia than we are in thinking about what we would call here, I think, social-emotional learning. The culture of East Asia emphasizes the group, not the individual. They're often called collectivist cultures, or the one I prefer is communitarian cultures. And so there's constant emphasis on the children's building relationships with each other and coming to think of the class as a unit that does things together, that learns together, that plays together, and that gives thought to how they are interacting with each other. There's a lot of emphasis on this in the lower grades. Now, you would think that that kind of emphasis would lead to less emphasis on learning the material, and you'd think that our more cognitive emphasis would lead to our kids learning the material better. But as a matter of fact, the outcome, as has been shown in over 50 years, is exactly the opposite of that. So the teachers are putting much more effort into what we would call extracurricular activities of various kinds, whole school events, class events, events of all kinds. The school years in East Asia are longer than American school years, but the amount of time they spend in lessons is about the same. So much more time is available for other group activities of various kinds, and it seems to have a really quite a good outcome in terms of learning the material, whatever it is, you know, math, history, science to be learned.
And how are East Asian textbooks different from American textbooks?
Well, I say in the mirror for Americans, I say if an American came along and picked up an East Asian textbook and didn't know what it was, they'd probably find it quite difficult to figure out that it was actually a children's textbook. And that's because their textbooks and our textbooks look very, very different. Their textbooks are thin. Ours are thick. Their textbooks are light. Ours are heavy. Their textbooks are mainly black and white and have very few illustrations. They're just very straightforward. Our textbooks are multicolored with pictures of all kinds and special activities and things that the editors and authors seem to think will make the kids more interested. So the East Asian textbooks, like East Asian lessons, focus exclusively on the content that's to be learned. They don't have any of the extras, any of the frills, any of the supposedly interesting aspects that we use to try to draw children in and get more interested. In East Asia, they're just very straightforward about what the children are supposed to learn. And that makes them actually academically much more useful, not only to the children, but also to the teachers.
Part of the learning process is students giving wrong answers. How are wrong answers handled in East Asia?
What scholars have found out about wrong answers by observing in the United States and in East Asia is that in the United States, wrong answers very often are just left to sort of go by. They're not dwelt on, because the reason is because the way we think about things in the United States suggests that wrong answers are a little bit embarrassing. You know, so you don't want to emphasize that a student gave a wrong answer. So what the teacher often does as observation has shown is that she'll go on to another student and see if that student can get the right answer, and the wrong answer is just left sort of there, and it's forgotten about. And that's good, because we don't want to make a big deal out of it, because it might embarrass the child. This is completely different from the way things are done in East Asia. Mathematics is the best example. Wrong answers are cause for discussion, and it's not about embarrassing the student who gave the wrong answer. It's about the teacher and the class together trying to understand not only how to get the right answer for this particular math problem, but also what reasoning led to the wrong answer. And what the scholars have found is that when they pay attention to the wrong answers and they sort of dissect those and they say, well, now, what was the process of reasoning that led to that wrong answer? That helps the students understand the intricacies of the subject. And we're thinking mostly of mathematics in this case, because they understand all the different ways that you could get an answer and what ways to do that are better. So in the U.S., the focus tends to be on just finding the right answer. And in East Asia, the focus tends to be on what is the process of reasoning by which both correct and incorrect answers have been reached. And students just don't get embarrassed about this because it's a group effort to try to understand mathematics better.
If there's one takeaway that parents and teachers can take from your book, what would that be?
What we get in the United States in educating our children and the outcomes here, as many people have, like me, and I'm certainly not alone in wringing my hands over, you know, how little is really being learned here compared to other parts of the world, not just East Asia, by the way, is because, honestly, it's what we really want. There really isn't an emphasis in this culture, nor has there been for a long time, on academic learning, that is to say, learning math and history and science and so forth. And mastering those fields, obviously there are some families in which this is very important. But in general, thinking about the United States just as a whole, academic excellence is not a major good, you might say. It's not a major value. It's, everybody agrees it's important. You need to know some of this, absolutely. But mastering it, really being a superstar, no. In East Asia, it is important. It is one of the most important things. It is a matter of pride for families and clans that children do extremely well in school. And the parents and the grandparents and the brothers and the sisters and the aunts and uncles all feel great pride, not only when a young person does well in school, but even to see them studying hard, really putting effort and perseverance into it, is a matter of pride for families. And it's the most important thing, not sports, not clubs, not extracurriculars, but learning. And so they get better outcomes than we do. And, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. So this has to do with the culture, how we value things, what we really think is important in life. And it's playing out. It's playing out in our schools.
I've been speaking with Dr. Cornelius Grove, author of the just-published book, A Mirror for Americans, What the East Asian Experience Tells Us About Teaching Students Who Excel. Dr. Grove, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This was really interesting to learn about.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be included. And I'd just like to add one more thing, that this book, which we're talking about, has a website. And it's the website URL is very easy to remember. It's amirrorforamericans.info. Notice it's not .com, it's .info.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grove.
Thank you so much. Vicki, I really appreciate the opportunity.